Chapter 2. Two Nights in an Oven. Meanwhile, the four children crouched, shivering and trembling, in the great oven, where there was but just room for their four selves. Guillaumin lay down along the side in his favorite position, with his arm under his head. Marie sat with Louis in her arms, away from the door, and Henry spent his time in fruitless attempts to see something out of the narrow grating just under the oven roof, till Marie begged him to sit still, as she wanted to listen. They heard the soldiers ride into the yard, and wait, as it seemed, for a few moments' parley, before the sound of trampling feet passed into the castle. And then, in the pause of silence which followed, Henry distinctly heard a sound full of dread and horror, the sharp report of a pistol. Involuntarily, he looked at Marie. At the same moment, a ray of moonlight straggling through the grating fell upon her face and showed it to him, pale as death, with dark eyes full of terror. Neither of them spoke. Marie only pressed Louis to her breast. Poor child, he was already falling asleep again, and they strained their ears for further sounds. Henry, with his hot forehead pressed against the cold iron door, was doing fierce battle within himself. God only knows how that boy, with his passionate love of his father, mother, and brother, his earnest longing to do something to prove his faith, and his natural love of danger and daring, longed to rush out and join the others, to have some other share in that night's work than to be hidden away with the children. But Aurella's last words rang in his ears, "I leave them in your charge," and also a sentence that his father had once bid him remember, "My son, to obey is better than sacrifice." So he stayed at his post, and by turned round again to see if he could still see Marie's face. The moonlight only touched her hair now. All the rest of the oven was in shadow, but he did not think she was asleep. "Marie," he said in a whisper. "Yes," answered Marie at once. "Is Louis asleep?" "Yes, and I think Guillaumin also. Oh, Henry, do you hear them trampling about? I think they must be searching the castle." "Yes, they are coming out this way. Keep quiet, Marie. They will search these buildings. Pray God that Louis may not awake." They held their breath as the stumbling feet came round from the back door, and a party of soldiers passed close to the outhouse in which the oven was built. Henry could even hear what they said. "Come, Jacquot, what use to poke about here like a couple of bats, when there is so much to be got in the house? There is no one else about, and for my part I do not wish to look too closely. Such work is not to my taste." "Look there," interrupted another voice as the feet paused. "Here is something of a hiding place. Hold the light in, and let us see." Something that was not moonlight flashed for a moment through the narrow grating, and Henry instinctively shrank away from the door. "There is a door at the end," said the second speaker, and the feet came nearer. "Bah," answered the first. "It is but an old oven," and he gave a wrench at the door, which, secured by the inner fastening, did not open. "There, you see," he added, "it is stuck with age." But at the same moment, such a blow was struck upon the door that the two boys woke with a start, and Marie's hand closed over Louis's mouth only just in time. There was a moment of awful suspense, and then the first voice said, "There, it is just as I said, you two curious fellow. Nothing but dust and cobwebs in there, and good drink to be had for nothing in the house. Let us go back and report the work done." For my part, I never heard but that Monsieur de St. Croix had but one boy. At any rate, there are no younger children here. What the other man answered, they did not hear, as the voices and steps receded and the court grew silent again. The children remained panic-stricken and speechless for some time, but no one came. At length, Guillaumin heaved a sigh of relief and settled himself to sleep again without a word. Louis asked Marie in a whisper if they were to stay there all night. "I do not know, darling," said Marie, caressing him. Papa will send Arella to fetch us as soon as he can, and we must wait patiently. Don't you think you had better go to sleep again?" "Don't I hurt you, Marie?" asked the little fellow. "No, darling, not at all," answered the girl bravely. She would not confess even to herself that her arms were beginning to ache a little already with her unusual burden. "Good night, then," said Louis, reaching up his little face to kiss his sister, and almost immediately falling asleep in her arms. There was again a long silence, broken by distant sounds and cries, which every now and then made themselves heard, but seemed too far away to come from the castle. Marie thought that the soldiers were going away. She could not see her brothers, but she knew that Guillemin and Louis were asleep, and that Henry was huddled in a sitting posture against the door. At length, feeling as if she could no longer bear the silence and darkness, she called to him gently, "Henry, are you awake?" No answer. She listened attentively for a few moments and distinguished his breathing as well as that of the other two. She was alone, then, the only one awake. She almost felt inclined to call and wake her brother, but restraining herself, she leant back against the oven wall and tried to follow his example, but in vain. The slow hours dragged by, and she sat awake till the slow, regular breathing of her three brothers almost maddened her, and she had to pray for help not to awake them. She so longed to do so. Toward morning, everything became quiet. The most distant cries died away, and at length Marie fell asleep herself. She felt as if hours must have passed when she woke again, and found everything the same except that now Henry was awake and she could see through the grating that it was daylight. "Have you been awake long, Henry?" she asked in a low voice. "No, not very long," said her brother, "and I have heard nothing since. Give Louis to me, Marie. You must be tired of holding him so long." "I can't wait till he awakes, thank you," said Marie with a little resolute sigh. "He is happier asleep, and it would wake Guillemin too." Guillemin here lifted his head for a moment and looked at Marie to signify that he was awake. "Does your head ache, Guillemin?" asked Marie, perceiving even in the dim light that his eyes were heavy. "A little," answered Guillemin. There was silence for a few moments, and then Marie asked wistfully, "Do you think it will be long, Henry, before they come to let us out?" "It has not been light very long, I think," answered Henry. "I was trying to measure by the sun. It must have risen above the courtyard wall to come through this grating. But then we looked to the east, and the sun is up very early now. Before 5 o'clock, I heard Agatha say." "How should Agatha know?" asked Marie a little scornfully. "She never gets up at 5, and what has that to do with Arella? He would not be waiting for the light, for the soldiers to go. Perhaps they are asleep now, Henry, and that is why everything is so still." "I dare say we shall hear them going away soon," answered Henry, trying to speak confidently, but with a sinking heart. He understood better than any of the others what great danger they were all in, and found it very hard to do nothing but sit still and wait, without knowing what was going on. They all listened anxiously for 2 long, silent hours, almost without speaking, but no sound came from without, and the stillness began to impress them with great awe. It was like being in a tomb. At length, Louis awoke, and was so much alarmed at the strange place in which he found himself that it took time to pacify him. But he was naturally a sweet little fellow, and after the first alarm began to enter into Marie's desperate attempts to think the whole adventure great fun. He slid out of Marie's arms and tried in the narrow prison to make a nest between his sister and Guillemin, because Marie was tired. He tried to catch the motes in the narrow sunbeam that came through the grating, and his pretty childish ways did the elder ones good. "Marie," he said, stopping short at last, "when are we going to have breakfast?" "When Mama or Arella comes to let us out," answered his sister. "You shall have breakfast directly then." "Can't we have breakfast before Arella comes?" suggested Louis, with the air of one who has a bright idea. "No, dear, because, you see, there is nothing to eat here." "I've got 2 biscuits," announced Guillemin suddenly. "I kept them for you, Marie, but Louis can have one if he likes." "Oh, thank you, Guillemin, but indeed I don't want anything to eat yet," replied Marie. "Give one to Louis, and eat the other one yourself." "Here, Louis," said Guillemin, getting at his pocket with some difficulty in the crowded space, and giving a good-sized biscuit, but Henry noticed that only one was brought out. Louis took the biscuit joyfully, and breaking it in two, held out half to Henry. "No, no," said Henry, pushing it away. "Eat it up, Louis." "Don't you want it, Henry?" asked the little fellow. "No, darling. Marie and I will wait." Louis folded his little hands together and said grace aloud, as if he had been in the nursery at home, and then began to munch his biscuit with great satisfaction. Henry felt rebuked by the child's simple act, and when Louis had finished, he said, "There is one thing we could do if we cannot have breakfast. We could say our prayers." "I have said mine," came from Guillemin's dark corner. "I wish I had thought of it too," answered Henry frankly. "Shall we say them together now?" Guillemin answered by trying to get up and kneel, a proceeding which Louis easily managed, but none of the others could kneel upright. However, they waited in silence for a minute or two, and then Henry, taking courage, began to repeat his usual prayers aloud. After them he paused. Like all boys, he was very shy of his own feelings, and did not like to say anything special. It was Marie's voice which at length spoke for him, as it were, in a few simple words. "O Father, thou seest we are in great trouble, and do not know what to do. Help us, we beseech thee. Take care of Mama and Papa and Arella, and take care of us too, and help us to be patient and good until they come to let us out. For Jesus Christ's sake, amen." Then the long hours dragged wearily by as best they might. No one came, no sound was heard, only the sun beat fiercely down upon the oven roof, and the heat became almost intolerable. Louis was flushed and restless, and though not actually fretful, was very uneasy, poor child. At length, to the great relief of the other three, he fell asleep again, resting against Guillemin. "Cannot you lean back more, Marie?" said Henry. "You look so tired." Marie gave a wan, faint smile as she tried to do so, but Henry noticed with alarm how white she was, and how different from his bright little sister of 2 days ago. He saw with relief that she closed her eyes, but she did not sleep, and her breathing came in short gasps now and then. "Don't you feel well, Marie?" Henry asked at last. "It's only the heat," murmured Marie faintly. "It will not last much longer now." "No, Arella is sure to come soon," repeated Henry, in spite of the fears which grew within him. "Listen," said Guillemin, moving his little brother's head gently, so that he could see Henry. "Let's play at the game of stories. I will begin." And he began at once to tell them of one of the strange, marvelous tales full of a boy's odd fancy, which he had never told before to anyone but Louis. It interested the other children in spite of themselves, and Louis, when he woke up shortly after, lay quite still and listening content. They made a strange group in that dim, stifling oven, Henry sitting by the door and with his knees drawn up, Marie leaning back against the other end and touching him with her feet, Louis lying in the midst, with his golden head leaning against the only one whose look and attitude were just the same as they had always been, and whose dreamy voice made a sort of music which helped them to be still all that summer afternoon. Toward evening, Louis asked rather piteously if they were not going out before tea, and Guillemin quietly took out his other biscuit and gave it to his little brother. "Aren't you going to have any tea?" asked the puzzled child. "Not now," answered Guillemin. "That is for you." "Marie must have some," said Louis, moving nearer to his sister, who had not moved or spoken for some time. "No, thank you," whispered Marie, but in so strange a voice that Henry exclaimed, "Marie, you will faint. You must eat something." "I cannot," answered Marie, with a more painful gasp. "I cannot breathe." "I will open the door," exclaimed Henry in great alarm. "We will not wait any longer. It must be safe." "No, no," cried Marie with sudden energy, striving to grasp her brother's arm. "Guillemin, stop him till the sunlight comes through on the second morning. Arella said it." But he didn't mean you to die, Marie, answered her brother hoarsely. Louis gave a low cry of terror. I shall not die, said Marie's sweet voice, growing faint again as she spoke. Christians and de St. Croix, Henry, let us be worthy of our name. But Henry had buried his face in his hands and his whole frame writhed with the sobs, which he would not let come. Dearer to him than father, mother, or brother, or life itself, was his twin sister Marie, and never in all his life did he so keenly feel what trial was till then. He did not hear the unwonted caresses and soothing speech from Guillemine, which at last quieted Louis enough to eat his biscuit and fall asleep again, nor the sweet childish prayer which he repeated aloud before doing so. After a while he strained his ears to catch Marie's breathing and thought she was asleep. But Marie did not sleep. In fact, she scarcely even dozed that long night through. Her breath grew short and quick, and more than once she thought, in spite of her brave words to Henry, that she must die before the morning came. But at last the moonlit light faded, the darkness changed, and the blessed sunlight struck upon the wall once more. Henry restrained an eager spring when he saw Marie's closed eyes and thought she was asleep. In a very few moments, she opened her eyes. "Has the light come back?" she asked feebly. "Oh, Henry, open the door." Henry needed no second bidding. The bolt went stiffly back again, and the door was pushed open with such violence that Henry fell out as well, and hastily jumped up from the ground, not hurt, but frightened at his own want of caution. However, no sound came to break the stillness of the sweet summer morning which had now dawned. The sudden change from the stifling gloom to fresh air and sunshine made him giddy, but he soon recovered himself and held out his arms for Louis. Guillemine already stood by his side, and they helped Louis to get down, but Marie did not move. "Marie! Marie!" cried Henry in agony, springing back again to his sister's side and finding her in a dead faint. "Guillemine, help me! She is dying!" "Stay here, Louis," said Guillemine as he turned to Henry's help, and between them they got Marie out of the oven and laid her on the ground, her long black hair trailing in the dust and her pale, lovely face so changed that even in that moment Henry noticed how different it was to her fresh, girlish beauty of 3 days back. "See if you can get some water, Guillemine," said Henry hastily. "Go carefully, in case there still should be danger. There is a well in the first court." Guillemine came back almost immediately, with his handkerchief dripping. He had not stayed to look for anything to carry water, and laid it on her forehead. In a few moments she revived, and the sight of Louis, who lay sobbing with his face to the ground, did more to restore her than anything. She stretched out her arms to him, and he crept thankfully to her side. For a moment the four children, still weak and dizzy from their long confinement, sat silently in the rough, tumble-down outhouse, where the sunlight fell upon them. Then Marie, with the new sweet gravity which in those terrible nights had taught her, said gently, "Let us thank God for bringing us out safely, and then we will try to find the others." They knelt once more, this time with less difficulty, and Henry said a few words of thanksgiving. After this, Marie arose and said, "Louis, darling, stay with Guillemine till we come back. Henry and I are going to find Aurella." Guillemine was going to object to this arrangement. He was the boy. It was clearly his place to go with Henry to explore the castle, and Marie should stay with Louis. But Guillemine scarcely ever spoke without thinking first. He remembered that Henry and Marie had always been together as a matter of course, that Marie would not like to stay behind. Clearly, therefore, he must do so. So he sat down again and began crooning one of his old stories to Louis as they waited. Meanwhile, Henry and Marie crossed the court with trembling footsteps and approached the kitchen door. There was no sound of anything alive, nor did anything here look as if it had been disturbed. They entered the castle and went first into the kitchen. Evidently, someone had been there, for everything was in complete disorder. Cupboards flung open, in one case even the door had been wrenched from its hinges, and every shelf was bare. A table was overturned, two chairs were broken, smashed, and empty bottles lay in every direction. The floor was covered with dirt and litter. Yet no one appeared. There was not even the cat, which had spat and growled at Henry when he first passed through the kitchen on that night which seemed now so long ago. How dreadful, how unbearable that utter stillness grew. With a vague sense of increasing awe, the two children left the room and crept noiselessly up the staircase, not speaking to each other. In the bedrooms, it was the same again. Everything was gone but the bare furniture, which had been too heavy to carry away, and that was broken and flung about in all directions. And here, too, were the same silence and desolation. Mary tried to call for Agatha, but the word died on her lips, and she dared not mention any other. Slowly they went down the other staircase to the room where they had left their parents, half unwilling to enter, as doubtful what they might find. Poor things, poor children, what was it that they did find when at last they opened that door and stood upon the threshold? Two figures, lying prone upon the floor with white upturned faces in the morning sunlight. Their own mother, still and wounded, with Arella's head upon her breast. Marie rushed forward with a shriek, which might have been the echo of her mother's own, and flung herself upon the floor beside them. "Henry, Henry, help me," she cried. "See, she smiles. She is not dead." It was the smile of death, but Marie had never looked upon the dead before. Henry came, but only to stand helpless, horror-struck, speechless, knowing too well what this must mean. "Mother, mother, mother," wailed the frantic child. "Henry, lift Arella's head. Bring water. Run." Henry knelt down on the floor beside her. It is of no use," he said in a choked voice. "Oh, Marie, she is dead. They are both dead." She stared at him with wild, unbelieving eyes. And then, throwing herself upon the floor, the saving tears came to her relief, and she wept passionately. Henry sat still, like one stunned. He did not even try to comfort her. He did not speak until she raised herself, after some minutes, and cried out passionately, "Oh, Henry, father, let us find him. Do you think he is alive? If these two are lying here," asked Henry hoarsely, almost savagely. "No, no," sobbed Marie, "but I must see him. Come with me, Henry." They went by one consent to the great door which led into the outer courtyard. There on the steps, as he had fallen, and half covered by the corpse of his old servant, lay Monsieur de St. Croix, pale, cold, dead. Was only what they had expected, but Marie's weeping became almost hysterical, and Henry ground his teeth as he knelt down on the blood-stained stone, and with difficulty moved the body of the servant to one side. Then they knelt, motionless and silent, except for Marie's sobbing, for more than one long, horrible moment. "Henry," said Marie at last, trying to speak calmly, "I must go and tell Guillaumin what we have found, and then you and I must do what we can. We must bring water," and she broke down again, but went on sobbing, "and after that we must let Guillaumin come to see them, but not Louis. He need never know all about it." She did not wait for an answer, but went away through the courtyard, crying bitterly, leaving Henry kneeling silently by his father's body. All this time, Guillaumin, who, in spite of his cool resolution, was old enough to be terribly anxious, waited in the sunny outbuilding, trying to amuse Louis, but giving up the attempt at last, and listening only for sounds from the castle. At last, when they had begun to feel almost desperate, he heard Marie's voice calling him from round the corner of the wall, and bidding Louis wait where he was, he rushed out. Alas! Marie's tears and her blood-stained dress spoke too plainly. Guillaumin's eager question died upon his lips. He turned deadly pale, and staggered back against the wall. At last, he managed to gasp out, "Who, Marie, who?" "Not all," he cried, as she did not answer. "Mama, father, Arella, oh, Marie, all?" And Marie only answered by her tears. At last she spoke, however, and said, "Will you stay with Louis yet a little, please, Guillaumine? I cannot come to him like this. Do not tell him, and as soon as I can I will come back, and you shall go to see them." Then she turned and went away again. Guillaumine did not move till Louis's voice, impatiently calling for Marie, roused him to go to his little brother and try to quiet him. That day went by like a confused, hideous dream. Together the twins washed away the terrible stains from those dear forms and composed them as well as they could. Then Marie came back, sad and tearless, to the outhouse and took Louis into the least disturbed of the bedrooms, where she had agreed to wait till Guillaumine and Henry came back to her. Louis, not too miserable to think of hunger, asked piteously for food, but she could find none. Guillaumine and Henry were so long away that Marie grew very anxious and listened at the head of the stairs for any sound in the still deserted house. They had found nothing but those four dead bodies. There was no sign of Agatha or of the other two. At last a door opened and Henry came quickly up the stairs. "Marie," he said in a low, earnest tone, "go down to Guillaumine in there. I can't get him away." Marie went downstairs without a word, and Henry hurried in to Louis, who, in spite of his naturally sweet temper, had now, through hunger and alarm, become extremely fretful. He took the poor child on his knee and sat down by the window. "I want Mama. I want Agatha. I want some breakfast," wailed Louis. The piteous cry was too much for his brother, and did what all the preceding horrors had failed to do. Henry burst into tears, and Louis roused himself with wide-open eyes and suspended sobs. "Henry, Henry," he cried. "Oh, Henry, I will be good. Don't cry. Are you hungry, too?" "Listen, Louis," said Henry, striving to check his sobs. "The wicked soldiers have taken everything away, and Papa and Mama and Arella are gone, too." "But they will come back again," answered Louis, with a puzzled air. "Mama won't leave us here all by ourselves. She will soon come back." "Ah, no, they will never come back," sobbed Henry. "Oh, Mama, Mama!"